Hello there. Welcome to episode 15 of 45 Not Out. 45 Not Out is the podcast for sassy career women aged 45 and above who are still serious about their career and life in general, really. Welcome aboard. It's great to have you here. Now, episode 15. In this episode, I talk to Olga Cross of Cross HR. As you would expect, Olga is an HR expert and she works extensively with companies providing external HR support. Now, as such, she's brilliantly placed to offer advice if you find yourself suddenly out of a job through no fault of your own due to the pandemic. I suppose you'll be shell-shocked and wondering what the hell you do next. Well, if that's the case, this is the episode for you. I'm pleased to say that in this episode, Olga oozes tons of good advice to job hunters and as well some good old-fashioned, upbeat and comforting words to support you along the way in your job hunt. It's not hard to see really from the episode why Olga is in demand for her authority, experience and clarity in all matters HR. She talks about how to draft out your CV at this stage in life, what's important, what it is, what isn't, and what you should put in and what you should leave out. And in addition, she includes what employers will be looking for. It's a fabulous episode with Olga, emanating far more advice than I ever thought possible. And if you are job hunting, I promise this is the episode for you. You will find some golden nuggets in there. Now, my sincere thanks go to Olga for firstly agreeing to take part and also for her selfless tips and advice. I hope this episode is as useful as I imagine it will be. Enjoy. Hi there. Welcome to episode 15 of 45 Not Out. This time we've got Olga Cross, and Olga is everything HR. And welcome, Olga. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Una. Thank you. Happy to be here.
Great, that's good to hear. Now, your business, Cross HR. Tell us a bit about it. How did you actually get into it?
Okay, well, I had been in HR for about 20 years prior to starting my business. So I'd done all sorts of stuff. I had worked in the corporate world, I'd worked for government, local government, and I was a contractor first. And in 2012, 2013, you know, we were still feeling the shocks of the big recession in 2008, 2009, and that really badly hit the contractor market. So I was kind of wondering, gosh, what am I going to do next? You know, I'm broke, you know, things haven't quite worked out. And a very funny thing happened. People actually started asking me to do HR for their little businesses. And basically what that was, you know, could you set up a little HR function for us? And, you know, you just do it for a couple of weeks, set it up for a small business and sort of, you know, you're on your way. And London, the entrepreneur startup scene was pretty big. It still is. It was pretty big at that time. So I started doing it while I was waiting around for the next big contract. And I remember on one of them thinking, I'd quite like to, if I had 10 of these, that's a little business there. And I'd quite like the freedom of it. But I didn't have the money to start it. So then I got another job back in the government in 2013, I think it was. So I worked at that. I worked my absolute butt off and saved the money to start my own business. And I started it on the 28th of January, 2015. So we're nearly 6 years in now. So, and basically that was to be providing HR services, whatever they need to do with their people, to small businesses. And so I thought the world was just waiting for me to arrive on the scene and it was going to be brilliant. And I was going to be living on an island, Una, at this point, swanning around in a caftan, you know, semi-drunk all the time. So it didn't actually quite work out like that, because starting your own business is a really hard thing to do. I will caveat that by saying, 6 years down the line, it's the best thing I've ever done in my life. But I put in, as anyone would tell you when they start a business, you put in 3 or 4 very, very difficult years. And it's the most rewarding, but also the most challenging thing you could ever do. So not only had I set up my own business, but I was working in my business as well. I was doing it all. So, and I was working for, you know, small companies who had problems. So, you know, you have a lot of that going on. And again, you never know where the next penny is coming from. You know, you're worrying around your finance, your marketing, your everything. But it was really good. And I'm still standing. And I'm really grateful for that, even with COVID, still standing.
So you mentioned that it's really rewarding and you get a full sense of achievement. What would you say is the main thing that brings that to you then, Olga? And also you mentioned the freedom of it as well. That's obviously okay. An important factor.
Now, I did think when I first started, I had these visions of me sitting around looking glamorous in coffee shops with a MacBook and, you know, and swanning around to, as I said, holiday locations, having a great time. That didn't happen at all. I didn't take a holiday for 3 years when it's because it became apparent that it isn't all sitting around. And whenever I was sitting around in coffee shops, I had the head down and I was doing it anyway. And I was going back to the house. So the rewarding thing is, for me personally, and it's not for everybody, is I prefer having clients than a boss. I was never suited to the corporate world. I was never suited to having a boss. In fact, it was probably a reasonably nightmarish employee, if I'm going to be fair about it. And I'm a kind of a maverick character, so I'm better off having clients. And I'm certainly better off having clients that are entrepreneurs, because they're outliers as well, and they have a certain kind of madness to them too. So it's sort of, I was much better off in that environment where you can be free and a bit more creative. But you still need to know your stuff, and you need to know it more, and you actually have much more responsibility working for yourself. Because if it goes wrong, the buck stops with you. I mean, you've literally messed this up for somebody else. So the onus is on you not to. But also what I found was, I was 45 when I started it. So it's given me so much confidence. Whereas when I was in full-time sort of corporate world, I think the system for me personally was designed to knock the confidence out of you. Starting my own business, it gave you more. And you find things in yourself that you really didn't think you had, like resilience, which has enabled me to cope with COVID, to be perfectly honest. If you're inventive, you become a bit, you know, you have to be a hustler. You have to be crafty, and you find things in yourself that you never knew were there, purely because you're kind of in survival mode. So you have to draw on every reserve you've got and find some. And that's what I found I really enjoyed. Now, materially, you know, it probably wasn't the best decision I ever made, because obviously you don't earn that much for the first few years when you start a business. That the rewards come later. So they're only probably just starting now, and COVID has completely derailed all that. But as you know, Una, when you work for yourself, it's par for the course, because you always do get interruptions, disruptions, things happen. You think you've got a big client and then they pull out that day and, you know, you're back to square one, and it's full of highs and lows. So, and it's being able to navigate and cope with those, I found. It's like, did I really do that? And you don't realize you're in it until you look back. So every December I used to look back and went, oh my God, compared to what it was like last year, I've come so far this year. And you suddenly think, I did that all that by myself. I did that by myself. And that for me is the most rewarding thing. It's not the money. It's not anything like that. It's that. And you think, I never knew I could do that. Did I really? And you're kind of being surprised at yourself, I think, is actually a really nice thing. You're like, oh. Because I found in the corporate world, especially being a woman, and especially as we were, you know, getting older, it just was knocking the stuffing out of me, to be perfectly honest. And I was looking at people who were getting promoted, and they were only getting promoted because they were playing a game. They were good at their job. And I found that if you're good at your job sometimes, or maybe in the vast majority of times, that can go against you. It's how you play the game. And I didn't like playing those games. I'm not a game player. Like that. And I just got very sick of it, demoralized, upset. And I just thought, well, you know what? I'm just going to go out on my own and see how that goes.
And
that was it, really.
Here you are, nearly 6 years later. You never look back, by the sounds of it. It's great to hear. And it's just interesting to hear about your experiences with corporate life as well, Olga, because probably what I'd like to go on to is, and the whole reason why we're doing this podcast now is, as you say, because of the pandemic, there will be women out there highly experienced, very skilled, very effective in the job, and through no fault of their own, and they probably played the game and being the person that the corporation wants them to be, but because of COVID, they're out of a job. They're over 45, possibly over 50, maybe clocking 60. Yep. What the hell do they do with your experience? What would you tell them to do? What would be the first thing, the emergency thing you tell them to do?
Don't think about being 45, 50, 60. Think about what got you there. So think about, people say, oh, you know, you're no use to running career because you're, you know, you're getting older. Rubbish. You have 20, 30, 40 years of experience, and with that comes resilience. So going back to my earlier point, when I personally was looking back and thinking, oh my God, I never knew I had all that in me. Think about all that you have in you, because a lot more than you think. And you don't even realize what's down there. Some of you may have brought up kids. You know, once you get to our age, you've probably reared a family, or in my case, you haven't. You've traveled the world, maybe. That was in my case. You've also suffered terrible setbacks. You've probably been fired a couple of times. You've maybe divorced. You maybe have failed relationships. We all know what that one's like. You maybe suffered the death of a parent or both of them. You've maybe suffered a loss of some sort. But you know what? You're still standing. You maybe have gone back to college. There is a lot of stuff down there that we just don't draw upon. And I think it's a bit like taking a deep breath sometimes. So, you know, we only breathe from, I think it's 20% of our diaphragm or something. Mm-hmm. I actually think we only know about 10% of what we're capable of. And it's only when you're pushed that you become aware of how capable you are of things. But I do think it's a particular female problem, in that our confidence, we just don't have the confidence that that men have. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm no man hater. some of my best bosses and great experiences have been with men, but I think we are, as women, conditioned to apologizing for ourselves. We're not willing to push ourselves forward. We get embarrassed about being good, about all this good stuff that's going on in there. Most women will have juggled homes, jobs, all of that. Maybe elderly parents, the whole lot. They've juggled the whole thing and kept the whole show on the road. That means something. Now, what I would say is, choose where you go next and try and be choosy about it. There are still plenty of industries that value experience. And I would say it may not even be for financial gain or anything like that. You know, there's the charity, not-for-profit sector, all of that sort of public life. They all still value experience. And you really are, most employers, if somebody sat in front of me and said, oh, and they do, well, I am getting on a bit. And you find out they're 48 and you think, you have 25 years worth of work left in you. And I want to know what you've been doing for 28 years when you entered into the working life, because that's what's useful to me. That's what's useful. Because I do come up against, you know, the younger ones, and they're great. We were all young ones too. And I think the first sign of trouble, you could cave in because you haven't had a heartbreak yet. You haven't been fired. Life's been good to you so far. When I was 28, 29, I lived a charmed life. Nothing happened. It's only when I hit my 30s, things started to go wrong. And that's what teaches you, I think, and builds up your resilience, for sure.
I was going to say, those are the experiences, probably horrific at the time, but they're the ones that make you who you are, aren't they? They sort of round off the corners and probably make you more empathic to other people as well.
Yeah, it does. It does, for sure. Because if you've lived, because you know what it's like. You absolutely know what it's like to go through all these things. And even in my job, HR, you know, I mean, bereavement's the one thing with me that, you know, I'm like, you know, you really have to cut people a break when they've suffered a loss. It's not an easy thing. And it goes on for years. And you never really get over it, but you have to learn to live with it. So, you know, there's all that sort of thing. But again, that's actually the worst thing that can ever happen. Everything else, you can get over that. You know, but I do think you just keep pressing away and keep at it. But everyone's worth it. Everyone's got something to offer, for sure. And if somebody doesn't want to hire you because, you know, you're old, in inverted commas, well, you don't want to work for them either. So move on. Jog on. the way I look at it, don't want to work for you now. Yeah, you put me off.
great attitude, Olga, great attitude and some brilliant tips there. Thank you. So if we can go back to that analogy to that fabulous woman who's marvellous at a job, lost a job, and she gets over the initial shock, she's got to now start applying for jobs and has to be doing it online via Indeed or Total Jobs or whatever. What can she do? Well, with a CV more than anything, and maybe the covering letter, you know, what can she do to help herself stand out amongst maybe the millennials, maybe the Gen Zers, whoever she's, you know, up against?
Okay. She'll have a huge advantage, actually, and that's, everybody needs to get into that mindset, in that her key achievements and stuff that she's achieved, she will have a lot more achievements than somebody who's just left school or college or whatever. And that's what should be the first thing on everybody's CV: key achievements, key skills. Forget key achievements will be, you know, I managed a departmental budget of £5 million and a staff cohort of 10 people. That's a big deal. And start talking numbers, start talking figures and percentages. Even though you might feel a bit silly about it, don't, because actually you've probably done it. So that's what I would say the first thing is key achievements. Another thing, and I mean, you know, you might laugh, I would sit there and think, oh, if I was American, what would I say about myself? And they will talk about their key achievements. You know, hats off to them. We might say they're this, that, and the other, but it's like they're proud of the silliest little thing that we would think is silly. But if you're proud of it and you're boasting about it, other people will actually start to believe it too. Now, the other thing I would say, if you're applying for a job, just in general, don't do one CV and think that's going to be one size fits all. The best thing to do is look at the job advert and tailor your CV. And it'll only be a few tweaks to the advert. So speak to the advert. And, you know, when you're shortlisting and stuff like that, I look at that and I think, okay, this is what I've asked for. What's she got? Now, I don't want to have to root around as an employer looking for that information. That needs to jump straight at me. And this is a weird thing. It needs to jump at me on the first half of an A4 piece of paper, because I'm not going to look past that. So the first thing somebody should do is put their name. If they're based in Manchester, just say Manchester based. Don't say where in Manchester or London or wherever, because people will be, may well be prejudiced against where you live. So just put Manchester based. Put your phone number. Do not put your date of birth. Put nothing like that on there. And then just put a little bit of a personal profile at the beginning, which kind of just sort of explains a bit about you, and then straight into key achievements. And then after that, you start putting your work history.
Oh.
The first page has to be about blowing your own trumpet and make no excuses for it, because you know what? By the time you're 45, 50, you have 25, 30 years worth of good stuff that can be put on that page. So by the time somebody gets to your work history, and then education's way back at the end, and by the time they've worked out, got to the part where you went to school, which should be at the end of page two, which your CV shouldn't run any further than that, they don't even notice how old you are. They haven't even noticed it, because now they've got into their head that this is somebody who can do that job. All I need to do now is see them. So you're going in on, you're going to be the same as everybody else because of these key achievements. You may even be a little bit further along because you've spoken to them, you've talked to them. Another good thing to do is covering letter. And most people don't do that. A really nice covering letter saying why you think you'd be good for that job. Always get it. And it's old fashioned, but it works. Because that shows you've sat down, you've given it time, you've had a respect for yourself, and you've had respect for the organization you're applying for the job for. And it could be that you just need the money. That's all fine. But that's what you do. Because I'll tell you what, the art of letter writing is gone. Anyone under the age of 40 doesn't do it. I'll tell you what, that does give you a bit. Because at the end of the day, a lot of people that are recruiting you are still your age.
Yes, absolutely. Brilliant tips there, Olga. Fantastic. Thank you. Now, you mentioned about speaking to the advert and you know, you may have bullet points, or it may just be in paragraph or anything. But, and I think you might have answered this within that, but I just wondered, I mean, back in the day when I've been self-employed for a while, but back in the day when I have applied for jobs, I did wonder, is there a particular formula that HR departments use to shortlist candidates, or is it just how they match to the job spec?
Generally, it's just the job spec, really. I mean, generally you find in the larger or more corporate organizations or public sector, they have a really set formula. So they'll have like shortlisting criteria against objectives and scoring and all that. And that's mainly so they don't get sued. And that they can demonstrate that they've treated everyone fairly. But, you know, the other organizations, it's just, I put a job out there, can this person do the job? And then it needs to come at you fairly quick. So bearing in mind, you have half of your first page, you have half of an A4 piece of paper to actually get somebody to read past that. So I would just say, it's like you go into a supermarket, isn't it? And you want a can of beans. You don't really want to be having to be looking up and down the aisles and da-da. You just want to look straight up. There are beans. I'm going to go there and I've got three choices of beans. It's actually that simple. Whereas you'll actually lose interest if you've got to scrap around, or you're fed up, or you're getting a bit bored of it all. And that's not what you want. You have to make that easy for the person who's shortlisting. And trust me, I've done enough of it. Sometimes we score sheets, sometimes we don't. As I said, the bigger the organization, the more established, they will have set processes because they have to, and they've got to prove it. The smaller ones don't tend to. And funny enough, the smaller ones tend to trust their gut a lot more.
That's good to hear. That's great to hear.
Yeah. Larger ones tend to be quite prescriptive.
Yeah. Yeah. So
not all, but in the main, some of them. Yeah.
Just with jobs on the CV, Olga. Now, obviously this is an age thing, and you were probably like me, were you sort of working through the 80s? Were you, or had you not?
Yeah, gosh, yeah. Yeah. Well, funny enough, I was watching It's a Sin on the TV at the weekend, and I thought, oh my God, that brings me back. Oh yeah, I was well going strong in 1984, 1985. I had the hair, Madonna. Love it.
Yes. Well, that was a cultural thing back in the working world. I don't know if you found it, because I was in Manchester, you probably were down in London by then. Well, but yeah, it was there was a mindset that if you didn't move around job every 2 years, there was something wrong with you. That was the mindset that I sort of thinking in. Now, that's fine, and I did job hop a lot, but the thing is, if I ever need to write a CV, and you're saying keep it brief, there are jobs that I need to knock off, because otherwise my CV would go on like 3 or 4 pages. What's your advice with that? If people have had a lot of jobs and they need to really, you know, sort of decompress their CV.
It's the experience they've gained in that job. So I've done it. I mean, mine runs, because I've had like 3 career changes. So mine, not that I need it anymore, but I still, you know, sometimes if I'm bidding for tenders and stuff, you have to put in a CV. How I kind of got around that was I kind of bunched everything up, which I look back on it now and I think that's what it's reduced to, one line, 10 or 15 years in one line. And I looked at what was kind of most relevant. And for me, it's probably the last 15 years is probably the most relevant. So that's not to say you shouldn't list. So what I've done is I've listed kind of the main ones in kind of 5 lines, maybe. Dates or whatever, or you just say worked in merchant banking or worked in accounts for United Utilities, or you know, and just from 1984 to 1992, accounts clerk, various. And if they get to that part, because bearing in mind an employer is probably only interested in the maybe 10 last 10 15 years, if that, and really you're only as good as your last job in a weird way, because what you're, from an employer's point of view, you're thinking, they're sitting in front of me, or I've shortlisted them. Why have I shortlisted them? I've shortlisted because they've told me they can do it. And actually, the last couple of jobs in the last 5, 10 years have told me that they can. I'm not really interested what anyone did after, you know, before that, because I would nearly expect everybody to have pivoted or done something different, or maybe took a break to raise children, go traveling. You know, people have all sorts of different things going on. Now, we do all have the embarrassing job, don't we? The one that didn't quite work out, where we're ceremoniously either walked out in a huff or they dumped us out onto the street. Best not to put that one down, and I really mean that. Or sometimes you will say, there's a bit of a gap here, and someone will go, oh yeah, bad experience. Do you know what? We've all had them. You just think, yep, we've all had them. Don't worry about that one. As long as you didn't kill someone or commit a criminal offence, I'm okay with that. And they go, oh, it wasn't quite what it said on the tip. Yeah, we've all had those ones. So don't be embarrassed by that either, because it takes a lot for someone to walk away from something. Or, you know what, there's no shame in being fired or being made redundant. As I said, as long as it's for nothing illegal, as long as you didn't harm anybody or do anything criminal. Generally, we all tend to come back from those kind of negative situations a lot stronger. Mm. Even our Prime Minister Boris was fired. Did you know that? He was fired.
No.
He was fired. And he admits it. He freely admits it. It was he was fired from the Times.
Blimey.
And it was one of his first jobs, and they chucked him out, and he, you know, the rest is history sort of thing. And you'll generally find that most people, you know, will have one of those under their belt, and that's, nowadays I would not see that as a negative thing. Now, it's not something you should go into an interview and start shouting about, but don't be embarrassed if you've been made redundant either, because that's nothing to be ashamed of at all. And that's a huge change to when we grew up in the 80s.
Oh, hell yes.
In the 90s, it was seen as embarrassing. You were ashamed if you were made redundant, whatever. Now, nothing. In fact, people now, if I'm doing a redundancy program or whatever, are mortified they haven't been made redundant, because they want to move on. They want to do new exciting things. They want the money to be able to do it. And it's the ones left behind tend to be the worry, as opposed to the ones that have moved on, because they move on and they do something else. Or they at least have a good old holiday out of it. and they might have 3 or 4 months off. And I don't worry about those people at all, because generally they tend to improve their lives as opposed to not. And I think in this case, even though COVID's been so traumatic and it's been awful for an awful number of people, hopefully it won't last for much longer. And when it does roar back, hopefully it'll roar back. And we'll just look at this as the most awful, weird episode that we've all just lived in our lifetime.
Yeah, brilliant.
I hope, and that's what we have to do.
Now, with all those years in HR, Olga, I would imagine your path has crossed with some rather amazing women that you've helped, either when you're in corporate life or what you've done since you've been a consultant. Are there any sort of stories that you can tell us about that would probably be quite inspirational for some of the women listening in?
Okay. This is a hard one. This is a tough one. I'll tell you why. I find us women aren't always very nice to each other. And that can be true in the corporate environment more so than anything. And, I've come across that, and I think most of us women have, that some of the worst experiences we've had in work have been at the hands of each other, and shame on us for that. That's all I have to say. When it's come to, I wouldn't say inspirational women, I'd say inspirational people. And I have come across some ones that, you know, have been absolutely great, and just, you know, they've helped me. There isn't anything, any single thing that any I could kind of name at the moment. Probably when this is over, I'll be able to. it's just one of those. But I will say this. If you are caught up in a weird situation at work, in a situation that isn't very nice, that person isn't going to change. You have to. And I think 100%, I always tell people, walk. Just go. Find yourself. Settle down. Keep quiet. Head under the radar. And make your plan and give yourself 3 months. Don't look up within 3 months, because that isn't going to change. You may think it is, but it's not. It's a bit like being in a bad relationship. It takes a lot to do it, but you've got to do it.
Yeah, because is that, like you say, you've got the stress then of holding down your job, keeping your head under the radar, and then looking for a job and sneaking out for interviews.
I have to say, of all the women I have met, it's the clients, when I went self-employed, they're the ones that inspire me the most. Because again, they've gone out on a limb and done it for themselves. Yeah. And it's not about being self-employed at all. I do have one client who is a big sort of established public sector client. And the lady in charge there is fabulous. She's the nicest person you've ever met in your life. The most brilliant person I've ever met, best at her job. And she did not realize how good she was until we all kind of ganged up on her about 2 years ago and told her. And she reached such heights. She was humble and she was decent and she was letting everyone steal her prize. And it was like, don't. you mustn't let that happen. And I find as women, we tend to do that so much. We sabotage ourselves. And I wish we didn't. I do it. But you like we're doing it.
do you think that's a generational thing though, Olga? I mean, millennial women coming through now. I mean, I keep banging on about millennial women. I do apologize. I've nothing against them. Okay. I think what I'm a bit envious of is that not so much upbringing, but sort of how society was when I was their age. It was like, you don't put your head above the parapet. You don't blow your own trumpet. You keep quiet. You do your job and all the rest of it. Whereas these days, there's been a total 180 rotation. And I don't know whether that came in gradually or whether it was a sudden thing. I'm not sure, but passed me by, absolutely. But these young women come through now, I totally admire them, and the majority of them are not, they don't bother too much about, you know, sort of when it needs to be, they will promote themselves, and not in a blaggy way, but they'll do it. It's just like me, and certainly my circle of women friends my age, we just won't. It just wasn't done.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's two, but yes, they're very self-assured, and dare I say it, there's a huge sense of entitlement. Now, bearing in mind, we're the people who brought these people up and reared them. So we're responsible for this, whether we like it or not. We have to take responsibility for this. And they are very self-assured, I find. They are very confident. They will tell you there's things that they won't do because, you know, blah, blah, blah. Whereas we would have swept the floor if someone had asked us. And we've got a lot of respect for hierarchy. Maybe they not so, but they are very wet behind the ears. I will say that. And resilience, and I keep banging on about resilience because to me, resilience is actually the best skill anyone can have and the best mindset personally. And resilience will breed kind of that. We have an underlying confidence. And by that is what I mean is, I don't know about you, Una, but basically when I was knocking around in the late 80s, early 90s, most of us, we all lived in flats on a shoestring. We were all expected to earn our own livings. We were pretty much cast out into the world when we were 17 or 18 and told basically get on with it because I've done my bit. We all ended up, in my case, I ended up in London kind of at 18, kind of going, now what? With about a fiver in my pocket. And I mean, literally mean it, because my money got stolen about a week when I was in here. So, and it was just, well, I suppose I better get a job because I can't go home. A, they can't afford to keep me. And B, I don't think I could listen to them for years on end because it'll be brought up all the time. So you have that. We're also more streetwise in a weird way, because all the danger, a lot of the danger for these have been removed. Mm. So, they don't really see the signs of it, and they don't really know how to negotiate and navigate around it. I mean, I personally believe we were a lot more resilient. You know, I went into railing when I was 20 by myself all around Europe with a train ticket and about £100, and you survive on it. Now they've gap years and they've got, you know, social media, they can keep in touch, mum and dad send them tons of money, they can go home and live at home for the rest of their lives, they go on holidays with their parents, and that's all great, but at some point, they're not going to have that. Mm. And resilience is what carries you through. And it's also what gives you confidence. I wouldn't like to be cast out into the world with no support system or very little at the age of 34.
Yeah.
That happened to me when I was 18, because you're young enough not to give a toss.
Yeah. Yeah.
I get calls a lot now from, you know, mothers. If, for instance, you have a word with Tom or Anne about their timekeeping or something like that, they'll go home and tell their parents, and their parents will ring you up and say, how dare you speak to my son or daughter like that? And you go, they're in work. And have you realized that they're not coming to work, or they're doing this, that, and the other in work? You know, and it's like, and anyway, you know, they need to take responsibility for themselves. There's no way I would have gone home if I gotten into trouble at work and told my parents, because they would have just said, well, get on with it, it's your problem, and you shouldn't have been annoying people in work. So you just kind of kept all that yourself. And again, that's a resilience thing. And okay, I'm probably going to get slaughtered for this, but you know, I worry that in my old age I'm going to have to depend on these people, because they're going to have to learn some very hard lessons. And not that you want anybody to, you really don't, but I worry they won't be able to cope.
Mind you, COVID will have sent them a low baller.
Not, you want bad things, of course.
No.
And that's why everyone has protected them so much. But I look at, it's a cultural thing. There are other cultures that don't treat mollycoddle kids as much. Are they going to steal a march? It's something to think about.
I mean, one of the things that they call the snowflake generation, and I don't know whether that's unfair or not, but they're probably a culmination of what's happened. It's like, you know, the Me Too campaign a couple of years ago, and it was like, if you so much, well, I have worked on site as a freelancer with a lot of millennials, because I work in the creative sector.
Oh, some of them are amazing. I mean, I love them, don't get me wrong. And, but it, you know, you just think, God, you're good.
But they are good.
And they have such a social purpose. I mean, we didn't care, did we?
No.
We didn't care about the environment. We didn't care about, you know.
No.
Charitable acts and something. And they really are really into it. And I love that.
But it was this Me Too thing. And it was very obvious when I was working in this agency that, I mean, I would say it's 50-50 men and women, probably all between 21 and maybe 35. And it was like they had a breakout area. And I think that's quite common in creative section, yeah. probably as well, where you go and make yourself a drink and you take your laptop and you sit and do work there. So that was like used to be called common parts, didn't it? The common area and that kind of thing. So they were there, and I was just very aware that the men, and it was about the time that Me Too was going on, but I was very aware that the men were standing quite some distance away from the women.
Yeah,
and it was like, oh, and it's like I've with the Me Too thing, I've had a conversation with my daughter about this. It's like this case is going on at the moment where there's some business entrepreneurial businessmen that are subject to some allegations and all the rest of it.
I've come across that, yeah.
And it's all going through. But it's like when you get down to the nitty gritty, some of the acts that girls are taking these businessmen to court for, I mean, there will be some rape cases and there will be some sexual assaults. But then on the other hand, there's girls that will take people to, or at least flag it up and report it, that a man's put his hand on a shoulder. Well, I'm sorry.
In my day,
that was norm.
And oh God, it was worse. Worse than we're doing.
It was.
And you just probably thought, oh, he's a creep, or someone told you he's a pansy. Yeah. Watch out. And you kind of avoid. Well, you didn't. You stood two people away from him in the pub, and if he didn't make a lunge at you, you were like, oh, idiot. But there's two parts to that. Yes, it's going on quite a lot, and I deal with that quite a lot. And a lot of it is a generational thing. So there'd be people of our generation, men, that might say something stupid, right, that we would have just laughed at and just thought, idiot, or probably not even noticed. That's not to say they shouldn't be saying stuff like that, but our sense of humor is a different. And again, they might mean it and they're just being smart or trying to be hip or trendy or young or whatever, you know, we all try and do it, but it's a totally different thing. And what I found is what most of them are getting caught out in is on WhatsApp and social media. So you've got some 45, 50 year old man or woman, just let's say, thinking they're all hip using these things. But of course, we don't really know how to use them properly. And saying stuff that will be dragged up because they know how to save it, they know how to download it and all of that sort of stuff. And we can't get our heads around, but I didn't mean it. It was a joke. I mean, I'll tell you what, I wouldn't want to be going out and about now into the pub after work. I used to love my Thursday nights and Tuesday nights. And it was like, you know, the big socialization that we did after work was part of our lives. We, you know, that's how I ended up. My love life was dependent on it, to be perfectly honest. And we had such a laugh. I worry now that that's gone, and that's kind of unfortunate. Nobody should be harassed. I get that. But also, there are times a bit of balance and a bit of nuance has to come into it. And I think that's completely missing because everybody's now afraid. I mean, I had a client and we get on great and we're both, you know, same age. And I walked in one day and he said, "Oh, you look nice today." And I went, "Thanks." And I was absolutely delighted with myself because who doesn't like being, "You look lovely today." It just really, and then he went, "Oh my God, I shouldn't have done that."
Oh.
And I went, "Why not?" I said, "It's made my day." And he went, "Well, you're not supposed to do that anymore, are you?" And actually he's right, you're not. And that's sad. And to me, that's sad. He hasn't said, "Oh, you know, look at your boobs," or, you know, "Nice." He hasn't said any of that. He's just said, "I look nice." Anybody likes to be told that.
Yeah.
But you can't. And I said to him, "Yes, you can't say that really anymore. You can say it to me. Please do keep saying it. But you can't, because it could be misinterpreted." And I have had loads. In fact, it was really sad. I had one client and he said something very stupid. He didn't do anything stupid. He said something very stupid. That in the normal course of events would have been just, "Don't ever do that again. That was stupid." He got sued. His marriage broke up. The allegations that were laid against him were horrific. The young lady in question was threatening to go to the police. And believe you me, it wasn't a police matter. It really was. It was somebody who said something very silly. And he ended up having to pay her off. He ended up having a nervous breakdown over it. Because of me too, even if you say something, she called it a sexual assault. He never laid hands on her. He never said anything overtly sexual. There was nothing like that gone. It was something, a very, very stupid comment. For a young lady who was wearing very revealing clothing and who wasn't shy about going around flaunting it. But when roles were reversed, that's what happened. And he didn't have a leg to stand on. And again, I thought, oh gosh, is this what we've come to? And I'm finding a lot of things now aren't put in context. You're either bullying, harassing, sexually assaulting someone, and it's all become really extreme. And I'm thinking, how do we get to this? Yes, what happened maybe in our day wasn't great, and it wasn't, you know, it really wasn't. I mean, you couldn't go to anybody about anything because no one would believe you, and it'd be like, and you'd get fired. Now, that was one extreme, what we lived through. We're now at the other extreme. And I think, what happened to everything in the middle? But actually, I don't know, it's something missing. And I do feel a bit sad for them about that, because I think.
Yeah, I was going to ask.
It should never get bad. Don't get me wrong. And I've dealt with some horrific stuff as well. That was like, you know, really, that should never have happened. And you try and, you know, you deal with it. But I think we've gone to such a place that it's like nobody can say anything. It's hard.
Do you think there will be,
or it's gone underground? People are sitting in those tiny little pockets, usually our age.
Do you think there will be a bit of a redress, that we will enter the middle ground?
No, I don't.
You think it will stay as it is?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. Interesting. It'll be interesting to see when we get the other side of this pandemic. I mean,
it's not just parents. Sorry, I'm on a roll now. It's not just parents. It's the whole system. It's the schooling. It's everything. And that's actually how the whole system is geared towards that now. So, and that's not going to change, because why should it? You know, it won't. And it won't soften at all. In fact, it'll probably get even more extreme, I would say. This is a generation that, and I'm really not knocking them, because there's some, honestly, I adore loads of them. No is a huge concept. You don't say no straight up, or if you say you've done something wrong, you can't just say it. You have to sit down and reason and bargain and explain and sell it to them. That's really difficult for our generation to do, because we were always told, you're that, you're this, that, the other, you know, go off and do it, mind your own business, yeah, stop bothering me. I was at work and everything. This is different. You've got to sell this stuff to them, and it's all this talking and reasoning, which we just think, God, I just want to get on with work.
Yes, adds to the workload. somewhat.
But you know, I worked, I do a lot of work with the tech companies, and so I'm dealing with them, you know, that generation all the time. And, you know, they're very sensible. They're very mature, I have to say, compared to us. They're very earnest. And I love all that. And I think that's really great. And I love talking to them about it and stuff. And then it's sort of, you know, the other extreme, because we, you know, we were just, it's just an extreme. And there's, you know, I suppose it's plenty wrong with us. Mm. All of these problems that are now resulting in the world, it's kind of our lot. I've created them.
Yes. And anyway, Olga, thank you for that. Thank you for being so honest and open. And thank you for those amazing tips. I will be hoping that there'll be tons of stuff in there for people who are having our age, who are having to find jobs and are so daunted by it. But the mindset that you've put over there is brilliant. That's fantastic. Thank you.
I just have to say to everybody out there, just resilience. You have been through so much. If you're in your 40s and 50s, don't wipe that under the carpet and think it doesn't matter. It does matter. It matters hugely. And you've got a lot more in there than you think, reserves in the tank. We all do. We all do. And you can do it, and you will get a job. Of course you will. At the end of the day, hopefully this won't last forever. And there is a skills shortage. And who's best to fill it? Anyway, we all have to stay working until we're in our 70s anyway, because we've no pensions. That's another thing we did. We messed that up too, us lot. We've stolen the millennium's futures.
67, isn't it now, I think, state retirement age.
That's only state retirement, but most of it, I know myself, I'm just going to have to keep going. Don't have any pension to speak of, so we're just going to have to keep going.
Gosh.
And we did that to ourselves.
I know. I can remember all that coming in. Anyway, Olga, as I say, thank you for that. But before I let you go, if I may, there's just one thing that's beginning to be the signature of 45 Not Out. And I ask it to every guest. It's just thinking of your history, your career history. If you could revisit when you were 16, 18, 21, whenever you entered the world of work, what advice would you give yourself now with the intervening years?
I don't know whether it's whether I was young or just conditioned. It was, a job isn't for life. It's not the be all and end all. But, and women are really bad at this, I wish I had saved. We are really, really, really not financially savvy. And I wish to God I was more financially savvy in my younger years. That's what I wish. It's nothing to really to do with work. Even if you just saved £2 a week right back in the, didn't blew it all. And that is probably my younger self, once I started working, was, why didn't you put aside £2 a week and then up it to fiver when you get to 25 and a tenner when you get to 30. You know, it's when you think about it, it's financially savvy, I think they should teach in schools, and that's just not for people of mine. How do you do set accounts, your credit cards, interest rate, compound interest, all of that, pensions, the lot. They should sit down and have a class on that in school.
I think bit by bit they are starting to, but probably not deep enough. And that's in primary. I'm not sure whether it's going through to secondary, because it's probably not
more important in secondary.
But it's not part of the national curriculum, so probably that gets brushed aside. But
here's the thing, just one more thing. I've loads to say. One more thing is never be afraid to try something new, because even though I did, and I've tried several things, and I've had three different careers or four even, each one tortured me moving into the next. And I look back now and think I should have just done it. But the torture, the lead up to it, if you, something pops into your head and you want to do it, give it a go.
Yeah, fantastic advice. Fantastic advice. Thank you, Olga. Well, thank you for all that. As I say, fantastic tips, fantastic anecdotes, and absolutely inspirational. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
No, it's been a pleasure. Thank you. So there you have it.
Olga Cross of Cross HR, talking about how she got to become the HR guru that she is today. My immense thanks go to her for talking in depth about how to find a job when you're over 45. She gave away some amazing, amazing tips, and I hope that people currently having to look for jobs have found a ton of value in what she said. If you'd like to get in touch with Olga or know more about Cross HR, I'll include a link to the episode in the episode notes and also on the social media posts. That's Instagram, Twitter and LinkedIn that I'll be doing with this episode. My utmost thanks go to Olga for her selfless tips on how to find work and for her honest and candid approach to life and work in general. Finally, thanks go to you, the listener, for taking time out to listen and for coming back. I'm hoping that the areas that we cover you're finding useful. However, if there's anything you'd like us to look at, please drop us a line via social media platforms. In the meantime, as this dreadful lockdown shows no sign of ending just yet, I send my best wishes to you and yours to stay safe and well and keep your chins up. We will be out of this at some point. Look after yourselves, take care, and stay safe.